What's up, guys? Welcome into Stacking Dubs. Your host, Chris Chin here. We're about 6 days away from training camp starting with 9 players currently on the roster, as I'm sure you're all aware of. We're just 7 days out from a decision needing to be made by Jonathan Kuminga as to whether he's taken the qualifying offer or not. Well, we're not going to talk about Kuminga too much, at least his contract. Today, we're going to operate at this point, as we pretty much are left with no other choice, as though he is going to be a Warrior this next year. And so I want to talk about a little bit more of this season preview. I'm tired of talking about the offseason. I want to talk about what the Warriors are going to look like when it matters the most. And we're talking about closing lineups, end of game situation. What's the Warriors' best combination of 5 players? It may be a revolving door. We're going to try different lineup combinations, I'm sure. But what I do know is that last year, the tinkering, the playing with different combinations, the never-ending cycle of just new lineups, especially at the end of games by Steve Kerr, through some fault of his own, but also when you have holes and just not a lot of one-way players, you know, he's left searching for to answer a lot of questions. That can't keep happening. We have to find a 5-man lineup that is our best lineup, or at least have two different lineups that are our best lineups, and you know that you're just turning to these when it matters most. Can be a little bit game situational, you know, maybe one's a little more offensive, one's a little more defensive, and then you just have your best lineup. Depends on opponent. Sometimes you might need to go bigger and include Horford in it. We're going to kind of look at all these different combinations, but I want to find you what I think is either going to be our best lineup or our top 2 lineups to start the season when it matters most. So we're going to just assume that this is going to how the Warriors lineup is going to look, or the Warriors roster is going to look. We're going to re-sign Kuminga to God knows what deal. But assuming we're keeping Kuminga for at least the majority of the season, then you're going to sign Horford, D'Anthony Melton, re-sign GP2, and then Seth Curry. And I'm operating under the fact that, under the assumption that probably not going to see too much Seth Curry, might be minimal GP2 lineups. He's kind of D'Anthony Melton insurance and just like a 10th guy off the bench. I'm not really going to talk about the back of the bench guys today. I'm just going to talk about what the real legitimate options are behind who you know you're finishing with, and that being Steph, Jimmy, and Dre. What are the best 2-man role player combinations that fit that lineup, fit what you need at the end of games? Let's just kind of go into it. So first off, let's talk about what your priorities are at the end of the game. And we're just going to assume it's a close game. So just, you know, call it a neutral situation. You need offense, you need defense, you just need the best lineup possible to win games. Obviously, priority number one, maximize your best player, Steph Curry. How do you let Steph be Steph and be the former clutch player of the year? How do you make sure he is maximized in end of game situations? Obviously, spacing, right? We're talking offense here, but spacing. You need 3-point shooting. You need to have not only just 3-point shooting and catch and shoot 3-point shooting, but it's also nice to have some movement shooters, right? That's where Buddy Hield comes into play. You can look at a couple other guys, but you know, if you can move, cut, catch, and shoot on the move, now you're creating additional spacing rather than just standing in the corner and just more your kind of traditional NBA spacing. The more movement, and obviously the better shooter you are from 3-point land, the more it's going to optimize Steph and give him lanes to work with. We all know Steph, we know he's going to be able to get whatever, or he's going to try to be able to get whatever 3-point step back or, you know, bomb that he wants to take at end of games. But he needs to find a way to get into the lane to be an efficient 2-point shooter. Very much of the Warriors' success, I talk about it a lot, is just kind of how efficient Steph is at getting to the hoop, getting into that mid-range, just finding shots inside the arc and putting pressure on the defense that way. And even if you're getting collapsing defenders from Steph penetrating and from there being initial space, that's when Steph can be a playmaker and find outside shooters. So the spacing essentially just kind of is one big giant circle that enables Steph to be at his best, both as a scorer and playmaker. So I think that's a no-brainer, right? You get as much spacing around Steph as possible. Secondly, well, we all know other teams are going to live by the whole anything but Steph mentality. So they're going to be sending doubles at Steph, especially if Steph's going to be in a pick and roll action with Draymond or whoever it may be. They're going to trap Steph the majority of the time at the end of the games, force the Warriors' secondary players to beat them. What do the Warriors do in this situation? That's priority number two for me, is you need half court secondary playmaking, but also scoring. So, someone that can play 4-on-3 either as the role man or just as that next pass. So basically a play finisher. I think about someone like a Kuminga that can get to the hoop, or sorry, that can catch lobs and finish at the hoop off of a Draymond roll and pass. I'm more so looking at essentially who is a high IQ passer, who sees the floor well, who can make quick decisions on the fly. Guys like a Brandon Podziemski, guys like a Melton. Even sometimes, I know we're not talking about him and I already mentioned it, but like GP2 is good as that short roller. He can be a good playmaker, short kind of quick decision maker. That's one of the things I'm looking for here in that closing lineup, is who can make good decisions in that 4-on-3 or just when Steph's exhausted, Jimmy's exhausted or out of the play. Who can you turn to get you a bucket when the shot clock's winding down? You no longer have like an Andrew Wiggins just to isolate. You need to find some sort of playmaking or scoring for themselves. So that's number two. Oh, and on that point, the only of the two role players that I'm going to talk about combinations, they don't both have to be playmakers. Obviously, it's a bonus, but really, I need that third playmaker in that role. So I just need one of my two role players to basically be that type of guy I just described. I'm not counting Draymond on in this. He's just kind of that. He is what he is. All right, on the other side of the ball, number three, my priority in the closing lineup is you need to be a switchable defender. Extra bonus points if you're a good point of attack defender, good athleticism. We'll kind of talk about guys that fit that bill, but you need to be switchable on defense. It's what the Warriors have hung their hat on at the end of the game, at the end of games for their entire dynastic run. It's putting Draymond Green at center, and everybody is switchable. A lot of big wings, guys that are athletic, guys that can essentially cover for Steph. Although I think Steph, especially at end of games when he's dug in and you need to stop, Steph is definitely capable of holding his own. I need a complementary both role players to be switchable, capable, intelligent defenders. Can't have any breakdowns. No reason to have a breakdown at the end of the game. Even if you're a young player, you should be hyper focused and hyper locked in. There cannot be any mental lapses. I'm just going to assume that's a given, and that aforementioned Jonathan Kuminga is not going to have lapses at that end of the court when it matters most, because that's just inexcusable. So, switchable defense is my third priority. And then lastly, it's my fourth one. It's just kind of that X factor in terms of poise, experience, composure, and just like intangibles. Like, who's just going to get on the floor and go get me an extra possession? Who's going to take care of the ball and not lose a possession? Who's going to rebound and fight? Who's going to call a timeout when it's needed to save a possession? Just who has that extra like IQ and X factor? I think of like Podziemski, right? In that situation, I think that's something he does very well. So those are my four priorities. And now I'm just gonna go through essentially each of the candidates to be in this closing lineup and just kind of address each of those qualities and kind of give them like a little rating. And then we're gonna talk about how you can combine two of those players together to give you the best fit, but then also just your best overall talent in that final five. Okay, so let's start with Podziemski. So obviously priority number one, spacing for Steph. Podziemski, while he's not the best catch and shoot 3-point shooter outside of Steph on the team and Buddy, he percentage-wise does probably shoot the next best. He's like a 38%, mid-38% 3-point shooter. I'd even honestly, minus a couple monster slumps, especially the beginning of last year, he shot 41, 42% for the second half of the year. So you could call him closer to like a 39. And if he's made improvement and is in a rhythm and kind of just growing as a player in this third year, yeah, maybe he's a 40% 3-point shooter. in terms of spacing, does he command as much gravity as like a Buddy Hield? Probably not, just because Buddy's a little more established and just especially as a movement catch and shoot 3-point shooter, which Pajemski really isn't. But I would still give Pajemski a slight edge in terms of spacing. And again, that's the most important trait to me in this final lineup. Slight edge over like Melton and a Moody, who are more like a 37%. At best, 38% 3-point shooters. So it's negligible, but push come to shove, I'd probably rather, it's crazy to say, but I guess I'd rather have Pajemski shooting a 3-pointer when it matters most over those two. Yeah, I don't know. Actually, it's hard to wrap my mind around that. I know some of you are probably like, we'll see. But if Pajemski can get to that place, then yeah, he may have the edge in terms of spacing. Half court secondary playmaking, Steph's trapped. You need someone who can cut, catch, pass on the move, create for themselves. I think as a playmaker, Pajemski's probably our next best playmaker, just in terms of like assists and just kind of creating advantages, either on or off the ball there. And, he doesn't have a ton of size to finish at the hoop. He's not a great finisher at all. He's not a great isolation scorer. He's good as a playmaker for others. So I give him a solid B plus in this. When I was initially kind of thinking about what I wanted out of a secondary playmaker, I was like, oh, Pajemski is what I want. But the inability to kind of score late shot clock, someone like a Kuminga, that dings Pajemski a little bit here. So I'm gonna give him a B plus because he's smart but not as good of a scorer. Switchable defense. Pajemski, probably where he's weakest here. He's an average defender on ball. He's obviously undersized a bit. Hopefully he got a bit stronger. He's a great off-ball defender when he's not over helping, which was horrible his rookie year, but better his second year. Fantastic as a charge taker, kind of rim protection off ball, just rotating down and at least forcing guys either A to turn the ball over on a charge or have to make another decision at the hoop. And the offensive player really has to kind of get under control and stop their momentum because Pajemski's very, very aggressive in help defense. So, yeah, while he's not quite a switchable defender, and I could see, depending on what lineup you have in there, him being the person that like a LeBron James is going to target in an isolation situation at the end of the game or kind of like a bigger wing. I could see them targeting Pajemski. I could see them obviously targeting Steph, but Steph's held his own. Steph's a strong lower base, and he's been hard to isolate against late game. And so maybe teams will go after like a Pajemski in that role. So obviously, the kind of the weaker side of pods here is that defensive side in a closing lineup. But then lastly, that poise, composure, intangibles. That's where I give Pajemski probably the highest grade here. I'd give him a minus. Just. Well, he's not that experienced because he's a young guy, and I don't really worry too much about him because he's got that dog in him. He's got poise, he's got composure, he's got intangibles. He's going to get you extra possessions on either side of the ball. So I think that's something that Pajemski does really well. So yeah, all that being said, Pajemski definitely probably my leading candidate. We'll get into this a little bit more, but just makes the most sense with lineups. We've seen him at end of games. We know that plus minus is extremely strong, and you basically just want the best role player, and that's maybe what Pajemski is—the best role player to connect with our three stars at end of games. Okay, moving on, De'Anthony Melton. So we're gonna assume Melton's healthy. Assume that, yeah, even though his minutes are gonna be a little limited, we're gonna say that Steve Kerr is going to use him wisely enough through the first three quarters so that he is going to still be an effective version of himself towards the end of games and still have enough legs to be who we thought he was going to be last year. And let's also assume that he's not, he hasn't lost a step due to his ACL injury. So Melton, spacing wise, similar to Pajemski, we talked about it. He's going to be like a 37, 38% 3-point shooter. It's been better in past years, although his most recent year was like 36% before he came to the Warriors. But he had a year up at like 39, 40-ish percent, I think, before that. And he's not afraid to shoot it. Melton, maybe even a little bit better catch and shoot than Pajemski, just more comfortable in that role. But Melton shoot it, hit a big three. I forget who it was, but late game. Before he got hurt last year. I can't remember who is it against, but Melton hit a clutch three last year for us. And yeah, he gives you some spacing, and I think he's strong there in terms of priority number one. Number two, yep, good secondary playmaker, can attack the hoop, can finish probably a bit better than Pajemski. He's never been a great scorer per se. He's always been kind of like a 10 to 12 point scorer in general, but in terms of ball handling, in terms of being a good passer and getting some assists and just kind of getting the spots, creating advantages, I would say he's probably not quite what you're getting out of Pajemski, but I feel confident having him as, hey, late shot clock, Steph's trapped at half court and the ball is in Melton's hands. And, you know, I trust him to go get us a good shot or find somebody that will get us a decent shot. So solid enough as a playmaker here. Switchable defender. Yeah, probably Melton's strongest. Again, if healthy, probably our best defender outside of Dre and maybe Jimmy. But yeah, Melton, best perimeter point of attack defender, switchable, only 6'3", I believe. But again, he'll be able to guard at least one through three on ball at perimeter. Probably his best asset here. And then lastly, poise, composure, intangibles. I mean, veteran, poised, strong with the ball in his hands, you know, from what I've seen with him, and his short stint with the Warriors seems very composed. Isn't going to get you draw as many charges or, you know, get on the floor or rebound as well as like a Pajemski, but very solid end of game. So a good option as well with Pajemski to be in that final closing lineup. Over to Moses Moody, who I must say I was enjoying watching the video with Chris Johnson and Jerome Randall just on ball handling, like killer crossover work, just really breaking it down, just kind of step by step, just really fine-tuning and the devil's in the details, right? So you kind of see the wheel spinning as Moses is getting a little bit more advanced with his ball handling, just on-ball decision-making, things like that. So I love to see that. It's just, you contrast that with the highlight videos you see from Kuminga, and just he's just playing against, you know, the ball boy out there, just kind of just, you know, mindlessly just crossover dunk. And yeah, it's fun to watch the highlights, but you worry that he's not getting as much detailed work as like a Moses Moody. So hats off to Moses's off-season kind of regimen, at least from what we've been able to access. Moody, spacing, yeah, he's probably just your best stand in the corner. I don't know about best, but you know, his best role on offense is stand in the corner and space the floor as a catch and shoot 3-point shooter. Not the fastest release, which can matter, but a very consistent 36. And while he was when before he got injured last year at the end of the season or had that wrist or finger thing going on, he was shooting closer to 37, 30%, 38% for that stretch for the Warriors or winning a whole bunch of games with Jimmy. So yeah, I think, you know, Moody's going to be your most typical prototypical 3-and-D type player. Not as much a movement shooter. Fine in terms of spacing, secondary playmaking, not going to give you too much. He's gotten better improving, getting to the hoop and finishing. End of game, I don't know how reliable that is, or finding someone to pass to. Not his strength, having basically make quick decisions on the move as a secondary, especially in the half court playmaking. Switchable defender, maybe underrated Moses's best skill. You know, he's emerged as basically our point of attack defender towards that, again, that run with Jimmy when we went to what, 23-7. Moody was that point of attack defender in the starting lineup. Use that 7-foot wingspan, aggressive, got a lot of strips on that crossover. Switchable as a defender. Yeah, I think so. Great. Is he great off ball and help defense? No, that's probably his weak point on defense, but as an on ball defender and just someone that you want on the perimeter and just gives you good size. Yeah, I think I'm fine with Moody being in a closing lineup as far as a defensive lineup. Poise, composure, intangibles. I don't know. We haven't seen him too much at the end of games. You know, we'll just kind of give him an NA here, not an incomplete. We don't really. You know, he's very poised in terms of maturity and temperament. He has intangibles in terms of, you know, getting some steals, getting on the floor, things like that. But he just doesn't have a ton of experience end of games. So we'll call this an incomplete. All right, moving on. I'm trying to hurry along here so this doesn't take forever, but Kaminga. Okay. spacing, not good. That's it. If that gets better, now we might find ways to get him in that Jimmy and Draymond lineup. The biggest X factor on this Warriors team, obviously, can he find a way to improve that 3-point percentage? Can he space the floor consistently? I gotta see it. I gotta see it. But until then, not sure he's given us much in the way of spacing, and that is the Achilles heel with putting him in this lineup. Secondary playmaking, no, as a passer and just seeing the floor, but yes, as a late shot clock isolation scorer, yes, as somebody that can just go attack the hoop and get to the line in a bind. Yes, as somebody who, when the shot clock's winding down, I'm fine with him having the ball in his hands, his athleticism, his quickness, and his ability to essentially get downhill. Probably his best attribute, and fills the role of, we'll call it, secondary shot creation. Ball handling and that kind of stuff, not so much, but he obviously has his strengths as a scorer. Switchable defender, yeah. That's the goal, right? That's what we want out of Kuminga, and that's the hope, is that, hey, let's, as Steve Kerr put it, and as Aaron Turner didn't put it, we want Kuminga in that Aaron Gordon, Sean Marion prototype career player arc, where, hey, you're a defensive dog, you're a menace, you are making guys work on ball, you are our point of attack, keyword attack on defense. Use your athleticism, use your length. Stay awake when you're off the ball on defense. I don't know. He's pretty switchable. I would have to think he can guard your Anthony Edwards of the world. He's guards some power forwards, although he needs to still get, I mean, he's strong, but just that lower body foundation, not great guarding in the post, but better than a lot of other, if we're calling him a small forward, better than a lot of other small forwards, better than a lot of other players that can basically guard one, two, and three on defense. Poise, composure, intangibles. Next question. All right. Buddy Hield. I mean, Buddy, more or less a one trick pony in terms of the spacing. He'll give us the best spacing, especially as a movement shooter, as we've talked about. Secondary playmaking, not much, because he's not getting downhill much, doesn't have a handle, doesn't see the floor. Yeah, I mean, Buddy, probably that's the playmaking is not going to be there. Switchable defender. I gotta say, Buddy was better than last year. He was passable as a defender. He was passable even late game situations because he was in there a lot because of his shooting, and teams attacked him, and he actually held up. He held up much better than we thought. It's definitely not a strength of his, but I will give him a passing grade. I never thought I'd say that as a defender. Not quite a two-way player, but I will give Buddy a passable grade because you can put him in. And when you need somebody to space the floor, depending on that lineup, it's a playable combination. Poise, composure, intangibles. I don't know. He gives great post-game interviews. He's got good poise messing with Jimmy. But other than that, on the floor, at net games, I'm not sure, Buddy, I would consider him an X factor in terms of intangibles at the end of games. And then lastly, Horford. I mean, that's just kind of a totally different makeup of, hey, like, that means, I could see if this all lineup is working, with Horford at the five, Draymond at the four. If that's our best lineup and that's just what's working and just been the best over a large sample size, yeah, let's just roll with it. Put Horford in there at the five, let Draymond play the four. It changes a lot dynamically defensively because you're not switching everything on defense. You're probably playing Horford in a drop. And that's a different situation, but hey, maybe that is your best two-way option and give you enough the spacing and size that you need if you're playing a big team. So matchup dependent, you might finish with Horford, or at least possession for possession, put Horford in there because positionally he gives you great spacing. Doesn't give you much playmaking, although he's a decent passer. He's going to make a good decision, but he's not, creating shots for others for the most part. We just talked about defense, and then, his poise, composure, he's a champion and a, I don't know, 17-year vet, whatever you want to call it. So yeah, he's got that. Okay, so we've kind of done our synopsis in terms of the priorities and a game. Let's talk about the combinations, because that's what you're really here for. What is my favorite five-man lineup? It starts with deciding between Pajemski and Melton. And that question will be answered just through their play, their performance. They're similar enough players in terms of skill set and fit. They're both, very solid all across the board and both offer good playmaking, decent, enough spacing. Melton a little bit more defensively than Pajemski, but they're both passable and they're both confident, poised players at the end of games. Whoever's playing better. I guess, first nod goes to Pods just because he's finished a lot of games for you and he's been good with Dre, he's been good with Jimmy, he's been good with Steph. If you're playing Pods, you're giving up a bit in terms of point of attack defense. Now you're asking Jimmy or Draymond potentially to be your point of attack defenders towards the end of the game, and that's okay sometimes, especially like a last possession. But for the most part, I want those two able to help in defense. So if you're playing pods, you pretty much are looking at, you need to play either him with Moody or maybe even Kuminga in terms of defensive side, right? You need someone who can go up and be a perimeter defender. You're not going to ask Steph to do it. So if you're playing pods end of games from a defensive standpoint, I probably want Moody in there as my point of attack defender or Kuminga. Obviously, there are concerns, but if you're looking at pods and let's say Kuminga on the offensive side of the ball, if Pods is shooting the ball well, and if he's giving you some gravity and you have enough movement on the offense to allow Steph to enough room to operate, it can work. It's the big question we all have, right? Can Kuminga play the three while Jimmy and Draymond play the four and the five? We don't know. I mean, we all assume no, and maybe there will be games that works, others that it won't, but you're gonna have to play this lineup, at least during the middle of the games. And hey, if you have some success, I could see the a Steph, Pods, JK, Jimmy and Dre lineup being, hey, get your five arguably best players on the court together and make it work. Maybe defensively, I think it works. You have good athleticism, good size. Offensively, the spacing, we'll see. So for that reason, again, it's performance based. I would start probably, if I'm doing pods, I would finish with Moody just because you know what you have a little bit more and finish with that lineup. And you're going Steph, Pods, Moody, Draymond, and Jimmy. The Melton options. So let's, say Melton's kind of been your better shooting guard, and you just want, say you're just playing against, someone like an Anthony Edwards or, just a dynamic point guard that you just need a better point of attack defender on. Now I'm putting Melton in there. And so I'm going Steph, Melton, and then the best combination, I don't think the Melton and Kuminga, you don't need Kuminga anymore because defensively, that point of attack, you've got that taken care of. And offensively, there's too many questions. So Melton, now I'm looking at somebody like Moody, also potentially for the same reasons we talked about, gives you spacing, another good switchable defender. You already have enough playmaking in theory with Steph, Melton, Jimmy out there, a little Draymond. You don't need that necessarily with Moody. Or the kind of dark horse here again, and it just really depends. But Melton, you compare with Buddy, and we're doing the whole Buddy Hield thing at the games again. But that gives you probably the maximum amount of spacing because now your backcourt is, a Steph, Melton, Buddy, and then you're probably running a lot of offense through Jimmy out of that post. And then you have a bunch of shooters and spacing for him to operate. I like that. That's not bad. Defensively, you're asking Buddy to hold up a bit better. You're a little small still with you are very small with Steph, Melton, and Buddy, all 6'4" and under. So somebody's gonna be after playing up against a small forward. But again, it's just going to kind of to be those matchups that you're gonna have to decide on and who's playing well. So yeah, I guess I've had to rank and I'm gonna leave Horford out of this for now because that's a whole different question. But if I had to rank where I would start my closing best five lineup, my first choice would be Steph, Pods, Moody, Dre, and Jimmy, with the potential to tinker with Jonathan Kuminga in that. But you could also go Melton and Moody or Melton and Buddy. We're kind of running into what I said I wanted to avoid at the beginning of this episode with too many different lineup combinations. I think you give yourself about 20, 15 games, 20 games, just so you know what you have in terms of just player performance, and then you kind of adjust accordingly based on what I said. But by that 20 game point, I want to know who my finishing five is, or at least one of two different lineups. It needs to be figured out before that, because when you get to December and you just are, guys are in and out of a lineup, you don't know who's playing on any given night. That's when you go on a whatever it was slide that the Warriors went on. Like it was like a, I don't even know, like a 3-10 slide or something through December. It was horrible. Cannot happen. You need more identity. You're returning enough players where you have a good idea of who works, who doesn't together. Side note, I also, in terms of Pods and JK, Pods was the best pairing with JK at a plus 8.2 rating last year. So if we're looking for ways to unlock JK and just, the best lineups to have him in, not only at the end, but just in general, I like keeping him attached with Pods. And then also by that logic, Horford. So you have a kind of a big at center to shoot in space. And yeah, that's what my keys to kind of unlocking better Kuminga lineups will be. But I'm gonna do more previews, guys. We're gonna talk about next episode probably or two. We're gonna talk about best lineups to put around like a Steph bench unit, around a Jimmy bench unit, and just kind of look at different objectives and just best combinations of players working together. Okay, well, it's kind of a long one, guys, but it's the most important time of the game with the closing lineup. So tell me what you think. What's your best five man lineup just overall with fit players? Assume a neutral game script. Who's your best five man lineup? Who would you pair with Steph, Jimmy, and Dre? I want to hear it. Leave in the comments. If you made it this far, hook it up with a like, hook it up with a follow, subscribe. I'm close to a milestone here, guys. So get me a few more subscribers, and I'll be happy to come at you with another episode as soon as possible. Until next time, peace, love, and stacking dubs.